Okay, tonight we are joined by journalist and author Simon Hughes, who is a Merseyside correspondent for The Independent. So listen, first up, thank you very much, Si, for joining us. We know you've been with us in the past, and we really appreciate you coming on again tonight.
Absolutely, no problem at all.
Thank you very much. So yeah, listen, I suppose you have a few things going on at the moment. You've just brought out a new book, On the Brink. I know last time we had you on, you were just after publishing the Ring of Fire book, which obviously was heavily based around Liverpool and a few different select characters during the period of the club. Maybe tell us a little bit about this new book and what it involves, because I think it's out, am I right in saying September 7th? Or
Yeah, September 7th, it's out. So it's a few weeks away, yeah, but they are taking they're taking pre-orders now on Amazon.
It's sort of the
book, I mean, Liverpool are included in this book, and there's quite a sizable, you know, chapter in there with we've gone and interviewed Jurgen Klopp talking about the challenges of managing a global brand such as Liverpool, with all the expectations that go with it. So there's quite a big passage on Liverpool and Merseyside football in general, should I say.
Okay.
So the idea is it's a bit of a travelogue through the Northwest. I'd read a few books on the Northeast, which are, you know, it's got a very strong sense of identity, which is, you know, the Northeastern identity is connected to the land and the industry and you know, the politics as well, and football rests inside all those three elements. So I wanted to do something similar with the Northwest, because it's obviously the region where I grew up, and I actually started writing about football in non-league level. So I travelled around quite a bit covering games, and then throughout my career going into kind of the national newspapers, started covering a lot of games in the, you know, across Championship, League One, League Two, you know, Conference as well. So I just realised there's a big story to tell there about the region and its identity and how it identifies itself with football. So to cut an even longer answer short, I suppose it's a bit of a travelogue through the region, going to different clubs and seeing how, I suppose, geography, industry, politics all shapes, you know, the football clubs, welded into the personalities of the people that I'm meeting. So it's a very modern book.
Okay, no, and obviously gives a sense of the different local feelings towards football and the passions for their clubs and stuff like that as well. You touched on something for me there, and it was actually a question I was going to ask. How did you get into journalism, and what was it that spurred you on into what you're doing now? Because a lot of people just know a Twitter profile.
You know, journalism has changed, you know, there's no doubt about that in the last kind of 10, 15 years from when I started. I mean, I started, I suppose, the traditional way, really going through my local paper, the Crosby Herald, which is, based in Liverpool. I actually used to go and watch Marine Football Club play. They play in the Northern Premier League, and the Herald being owned by Trinity Mirror, which owns the Liverpool Echo, was, you know, always short staffed, and the guy who covered the Crosby Sports couldn't always go to the game. So, you know, I was quite interested as a 15, 16 year old in this, and, you know, didn't have much ability in any other field whatsoever. So I just thought, I'll have a go at this. And one thing led to another, and then within a couple of years, I was kind of covering the whole of the coverage of Marine in the Crosby Herald, which, you know, isn't a massive operation, I guess, but it's pretty much the same thing as, you know, what people are doing, you know, if they're covering any football club. It's the same processes, you know, getting to know people, building relationships, contacts, you know, telling stories, you know, particularly having a close relationship with the manager. So it was the same kind of thing as I'm doing now. To you know, it's transferable skills. It's there isn't a great deal of difference, if I'm being honest. So I did that for, you know, kind of, God, must be 4 or 5 years unpaid, to much frustration.
I can imagine.
Then I got a job working for In General News in the Southport Visitor, and I think I mentioned it on Twitter last night. Actually, my first story in the Southport Visitor was covering a UFO sighting, which I think it might tell you all you need to know about Southport, perhaps. And then, you know, pretty quickly from there, I was quite fortunate that an opportunity came up working for Liverpool and Everton's matchday programmes. I was kind of flitting between those two projects for a couple of years, and then ended up working for Liverpool's matchday programme and magazine, and then I started doing match reports for the Telegraph, and then the Independent came along and asked me to kind of take on their Merseyside coverage, if you like. So, you know, there's a lot more to it than that, I guess, but that's the long and short of it. But I think now, you know, that those kind of routes in are probably becoming a bit more scarce because, you know, local papers are dying. The Crosby Herald, for example, is gone now. You know, 4 or 5 years ago, somebody used to say to me, you know, how do you get in? I would say, well, just try and do what I did. I know a lot of other people did the same thing. But now those opportunities are a bit, you know, a bit more difficult to come by. So so I feel quite fortunate, really, that I was able to do that. I mean, as I said to you just then, I think, you know, I was dealing with at Marine, that Rowie Howard was the manager at the time, and he was the longest serving manager according to World Football. And, you know, he was an old, you know, old school manager, to say the least. And I don't think he particularly enjoyed having a, you know, a teenage reporter firing, barking questions at him. So that was a bit of an eye opener. I mean, it kind of, I experienced a lot there, you know, getting locked in, you know, this sounds a bit kind of not something untoward going on here, but I remember I got locked in the toilets by his assistant manager once for writing something that he didn't agree with.
Oh, and, really?
You know, he was shouting.
That was his hairdryer treatment for you, was it?
It was, yeah. So all this stuff, you know, it all contributes to kind of, I suppose, how I am now. Yeah. You know, I suppose the journalist or the writer, I mean, I'm not really sure what I am, to be honest, a mixture of a couple of things, because I think there is a difference. So, yeah, I think that's pretty much about it.
No, fair enough. And in terms of what you're doing at the moment, you're doing a lot of coverage of, as you said, Merseyside. So mm-hmm. It is Everton and Liverpool. You know,
yeah.
There's been a lot of talk of the money they've spent this summer and whether they're going to be a threat to us. Personally, I don't think they will be. I think they're going to be just trying to consolidate seventh place again. But from what you've seen of them this pre-season, what have you made of the Blues so far?
Yeah, I mean, you've obviously, you know, they got a lot of business done early, you know, four important signings, you know, just before the market started to go crazy. So you could look at it two ways, really. You could say, well, Everton have spent a lot of money, but, you know, since then people have been spending double the amount of money that Everton have, you know, been spending. So it kind of feels like, you know, I suppose the glow of that kind of that expenditure has perhaps left some Evertonians. But I think that, you know, I think they have bought well, but I don't think that Everton have bought the type of players that's going to propel them into the Champions League straight away. I mean, they're still, you know, young players. Jordan Pickford's only played a full season in, you know, the Premier League. I think he's got the potential to be an excellent goalkeeper. But playing for Sunderland in a team that's resigned for relegation as a goalkeeper and playing, you know, for Everton, where the demand is higher, you know, it's going to be a big change for him. You know, Michael Keane, I think, is a good, you know, a good player, but is he the type of player that's going to, you know, take Everton, you know, above Liverpool, above, you know, the other clubs, Manchester United? I'm not really sure that he is. So, you know, they've also got the issue of Lukaku leaving, which, you know, I don't care what anybody says, they're going to miss him. You know,
I've heard
you know, all kinds of stats trotted out, you know, about Lukaku not not contributing in big games, and only, you know, had he taken all his goals out of the Everton team, he'd have still finished seventh. Well, he can't really look at it like that in isolation, because if Lukaku had scored at different times in the game, or hadn't scored at certain times, would have ended up as the same result. I'm not sure whether that's the case.
Yeah.
So I think that's going to be a bit of a blow. But I think Everton, a bit like Liverpool in some ways, but at a different stage of development, that if Everton could, you know, just progress, really. I mean, certainly, as you said, like, consolidate. I think the fans would be happy with that. They'd obviously like to have a bit of a cup run, because last season that didn't happen. And I kind of feel the same way about Liverpool, to be honest. I mean, I know Liverpool, it's all, you know, either the greatest of times or the worst of times. I just think with Liverpool, what they can't afford to let happen is to... is to, as it has happened, say, in 2008, 2009, or 2013-14, you've had a really promising season, and then the next season just fallen, you know, completely flat and fallen back three or four steps. As long as that doesn't happen, as long as, they make some signs of progression, you know, they stay in the Champions League, they get I think Klopp would do with winning a trophy, if I'm being honest, getting back in that cycle. You know, I think that'd be a good season. And then next season, again, you know, it's just about building blocks. And obviously to do that, you've got to keep your best players. And I think if Coutinho was to go, although I don't think he will, I think if he was to go, though, I just think it'd set such a negative atmosphere around the club. And I think the manager, no matter how positive he is, would find it hard to rescue that back.
Yeah, no, and that's my big worry. We were chatting about this recently and saying, you know, 13-14 was such a positive season. You came into that summer just thinking, if only we can add to what we have. To let Coutinho go out the door, regardless of whether he hands in a transfer request or anything else, to let him go out the door this summer just sends the absolute wrong signals to both the players and the fans from a club's perspective. So I think it'd be very, very difficult for them to let him go at this point.
I've got to be honest, I don't, you know, it's hard to know who to believe sometimes. You know, I understand the way fans think about journalism, the way, you know, kind of a lot of journalists are saying he's not, you know, he's not for sale, he's not going to go, and we've seen this all before and it happens. But I do think this time, you know, Liverpool's determination to keep hold of him will see him stay. I mean, that's not to say he's not going to go at some time in the future. I mean, I suspect if it was, you know, a fortune teller, I would suspect that he'll stay, he'll have a great season, you know, be one of the players of the year and then go next summer.
Yeah,
I mean, that seems to be the process for Liverpool now. But at least if that does happen, they can then, you know, prepare themselves properly for that. I mean, I don't think Coutinho is at the level of, say, Suarez in terms of his, certainly not, well, he's certainly not at that level. You know, I think he's still got some way to go. And I think in playing, you know, in the middle of the midfield for Liverpool this season under Klopp, we'll see him develop into a, you know, really top, you know, undisputed, you know, top international player. I know he's playing for Brazil, but, you know, just really one of the kind of the standards. European standard figures,
yeah.
I guess. And I think it being, I think he's a sensible enough lad to recognise that. I don't think he's the type of person to push for a move. He's not as irritable, shall we say, as some of the other players, you know, that we've seen leave over the last few years.
Yeah.
So although I'm sure he'd be tempted by Barcelona, because, you know, who wouldn't be? I think hopefully common sense will relent. I mean, obviously Coutinho's got a big entourage of people who are, you know, advising, you know, certainly approachable to the press and this, that and the other. And I think that, you know, they'd probably be keen for him to go. But I think ultimately, I'd be amazed if Liverpool were to let him go. I agree with what Jamie Carragher said the other day. I just think that, you know, they'd have a riot on their hands, really. You know, I just think that they can't afford that to happen, particularly with the frustrations they've had with the incoming transfers. Because, I mean, I understand why people are concerned about the lack of a bit, you know, the inability to get deals over the line, because it is a concern, you know, consistently keeps happening. But that said, I think that the squad is stronger than it was last season. I think Salah's a really good signing. I think, you know, there's some players who will improve again. You know, that's what you've got to account for. There are players who, you know, whose levels might lift another 10%, you know, through their experiences of playing together and getting out, you know, simply getting older. So you can see that happening. But I just feel that Liverpool probably need to get one or two, you know, key signings in. It's quite clear that obviously Van Dijk is one. I still think that that will happen. I just think that Southampton won't want a player who's worth that amount of money left on the bench, because his value will decrease ultimately. You know, this is the point where they want to sell.
Yeah.
So I think that will happen. I think Kate is obviously slightly more problematic because Leipzig aren't a club that are used to selling.
You spoke about the fact that the new book has a chunk on Jurgen Klopp in it. Is that the sort of most amount of face time you've had with him and the ability to actually sit down and properly talk to him? Or
yeah, I mean, the way it usually works, you know, obviously on a press conference day, you know, pre-match, you'll have your camera stuff, which everybody sees on Sky, and then Klopp will do a separate, like, kind of sit down with the papers for 10 minutes, you know, sometimes 15 minutes, depending on the occasion, depending on, you know, the mood. You know, he's all, I've never really seen him in a downbeat mood, if I'm being honest. There's some occasions where he says rather less, but that, you know, we haven't had any instances where, like with previous managers, where, you know, they try and cut communication through their frustrations with things that have been written. I know he doesn't read, he claims that he doesn't read the national press. I'm sure he'll be aware of things that have been written, you know, particularly if it affects him directly. But so usually my experience with him has been restricted to, well, not restricted, but like kind of has been that, you know, pre-match, post-match press conferences, asking questions, you know, occasionally bumping into him in the foyer at Melville, but nothing beyond that. So this was a decent opportunity to sit down with him for a decent length of time. And you know, just you know, as with ever with any, you know, Premier League football manager, you're not, you know, if you interview a lower league manager, you're going to get more time. If you interview a Premier League manager, just because of the time pressures, it's never going to be quite as much.
Absolutely.
But obviously, you know, with Liverpool being Liverpool, you know, kind of I write about them all the time, so there are other things that I can bring into the interview. So, you know, it's quite a broad, you know, covering broad issues, really. I would say it's probably a time sensitive, you know, it's not a time sensitive passage of writing. You know, I think it'll just reflect who he is and how he thinks about the world and football and his experiences in football, and just kind of illustrate what type of a person that Liverpool have managing the team. I mean, I think he's a far more serious character than, you know, the caricature and, you know, that we see on the TV. I think he's quite, I don't want to say calculated, but quite clever in, you know, being, you know, seen to be, you know, slightly more easygoing manager. You know, we've seen a lot of stress heads in management who, you know, in front of the camera have just kind of, you know, I don't want to name any particular names, but, you know, like, you know the managers who kind of constantly hostile towards the media. I just don't think you'd ever have that with Jurgen Klopp. And he's a far more serious character when you meet him, you know, thinks very carefully about his answers. But yeah, I mean, it's you know, it's not just a, you know, the passage on Liverpool. It's not just about Jurgen Klopp. There's other issues covered within that. So I hope that you know, fresh information and news lines, I guess, that people might not be aware of. So yeah, I'm just trying to give you the sell for the book now.
No, absolutely, and that's, and listen, that's why we're chatting about it as well. Where would you rate Liverpool's squad compared to their rivals?
You know, I can understand the concerns. It's similar to Tottenham, really. I mean, Tottenham struggled last season in the Champions League. You know, they did look tired in the Champions League, and the form only seemed to really improve after they were knocked out of it. So, you know, Liverpool's squad is a little bit bigger than Tottenham's, actually, and Tottenham haven't improved. So, I mean, I think that Man United's squad is probably the strongest in the league. It's how he uses the squad, you know, and whether Lukaku fires for them as well, which I'm sure he will. I mean, I think United will have a good season this season. Sadly, I think City will be stronger. People are talking Arsenal up again suddenly. I mean, I just kind of think that the problem with Arsenal is they're only one result away, bad result away at the Emirates at home from a crisis, aren't they? So,
yeah,
you know, I think that Liverpool will be competitive. It's a lot of it's down to luck as well with injuries, how they, you know, they can steer clear of injuries. Obviously, it's been a terrible start, really. Coutinho, Lallana, Sturridge all out for the first game. So I think that they will need to make two signings to make sure that, you know, that they're really competitive in all competitions this season.
But something you said there in terms of thinking that United's squad is the strongest in the league, even compared to City's, because I was looking at Man City's there today, and okay, maybe they're a little bit light at centre half, but other than that, there's such strength all over the pitch.
Yeah, well, I think with City, that the biggest problem last season, I mean, I know obviously Guardiola's been keen to get rid of certain players, you know, players who are past 30. You know, we've seen the full backs go and one or two midfielders. But I think the biggest problem for City last season was adjusting to the manager's demands, really. It's an interesting one, City, because if you look at the Premier League's history, there's never really been a team that's won the league playing possession football. It's always been, you know, counter-attacking football, really. Even when Liverpool nearly won it in 2014 under Rodgers, that season it was a counter-attacking team. It wasn't. Yeah. I mean, obviously they could keep the ball, but, you know, with City, it's a lot of it is, you know, about keeping the ball and being really patient. Now, I just think with City, they have to play a little bit quicker. You know, it's a very basic thing, but they have to move the ball a bit quicker to score goals and open teams up, particularly in away games. And I think that, you know, obviously he's been criticised, Guardiola, for signing the fullbacks, you know, spending so much money on them, but he does rely on the fullbacks to be a creative presence in the team, and he clearly wasn't happy with that last year, which explains why he's got rid of two or three of them.
Yeah.
And brought, you know, three new faces in for huge amounts of money. I mean, it's obscene, but if it gets into the style of football that he wants, then, you know, it's a necessary evil, unfortunately, and it'll probably see City being right up there. I think I'd be surprised if it wasn't a Manchester club that won it this year. I mean, you would envisage Mourinho being, you know, stronger this season. You know, he's got to grips with the players now. You know, he did the same thing at Chelsea when he first went in there. When he went in there the second season, he was just a lot better. I think their pre-season's been really good. No upsets. He hasn't even been complaining, you know, too much. So, you know, you can always tell when things aren't right because Mourinho's not one to sit quiet on it. So I think that they're going to be strong. I think City will be strong. And, you know, Liverpool could, you know, if Liverpool avoided injuries and got one or two more signings, I think they'd be right up there. I think on, you know, the first 11 is a really strong 11 and played the most exciting football in the league. But it's just when you chip away at those injuries. A lot of it's about the fans as well. I mean, I've written about this and said about it, and it's something that I think that the owners have got to get their heads around a little bit, you know, about the atmosphere inside the ground, particularly when Klopp talks about it so much. The fans are now probably going to go to the game, you know, in a slightly more negative mindset because they haven't got the deals done that the club were clearly, I don't want to say promising, but clearly, you know, they were pretty confident of getting. So I think that if he can get something done, if he even have to pay over the odds, it's worth doing just to get the fans on side, you know, just to get them thinking, you know, this is Liverpool, we're going to have a go this season. Unfortunately, they don't seem to see the benefit of that. You know, I always, you know, use this as an example, but if you think about the atmosphere at Anfield, Klopp talks about it a lot, you know, it can change, it can be worth a certain number of points to the team across the season, and unfortunately, you know, you know, I don't think there's any coincidence, you know, when you look at January and the problems that they had then. You know, they weren't able to add to the squad then. You know, the fans were going to Anfield thinking about Coutinho being injured, about Mane not there, and they didn't have any contingencies. So the same thing's happening again, and it concerns me that, you know, it could cost Liverpool, I think. But you never know with Liverpool, do you? If Jurgen Klopp can galvanise the team and start playing exciting football early on, I think, you know, they'll be there or thereabouts. I'm not like totally despondent about this season the way some people seem to be, I think, anyway.
Yeah, nor me either. And you mentioned the fans there and the atmosphere on the ground. I was speaking to Jay McKenna from Spirit of Shankly on a chat last week, and the big thing for me as well is the fact that so many fans are just getting into the ground, you know, 2 minutes before kickoff, 2 minutes after kickoff, 5 minutes after kickoff. It's very hard to create an atmosphere. You know yourself, you've been at the big games, be they evening matches or be they, you know, sort of massive games against United or whatever else that kicked off early. Everybody wants to get into the ground 20 minutes, half an hour before kickoff. And what that does is it builds a buzz. It builds that feeling amongst people that they're ready, they're up for this. It gets the players going because they're out warming up and the ground's 90% full rather than 20% full. So I think as much as the signings, you know, you want to see a statement of intent from the club, I still think we have quite a reasonable squad for the season ahead. And I think there's a big part for the fans because the fan base has become older and grumpier. And
let's just have it right, I suppose. It would help if there were younger fans, younger scallies who generate that anger and frustration.
Absolutely.
In the crowd.
Absolutely.
But these people have been, unfortunately, marginalised from football. You know, they can't afford to get into the ground and they can't stand or sit together. So I think that's a problem for Liverpool, and it's a problem for every club. But I think Liverpool, if you were to think creatively about it and be serious about it and really buy into what Jurgen Klopp is trying to create, it could, you know, be a really great thing. But I'm not saying there's any easy answers and there's difficult decisions to make. But ultimately, you know, the fans blame themselves. Sometimes they blame other fans. But I think the club have got to be the ones that lead it. The club have got to lead. It's a leadership position when you're the ownership of Liverpool. And I think they're going to have to make some serious decisions if you want to get the atmosphere to anywhere near what Klopp wants.
What sort of decision, you know, can be made in that instance? Like, we were talking about the safe standing and the rail seating. And also maybe you're able to incorporate cheaper tickets for younger fans that allows the next, you know, rung of as you say, scallies come in who are going to be being boisterous and passionate, you know?
There's fewer and fewer young kids going to the game, but if the people standing up in front of you and there's young kids behind you can't see, there's a problem. So that's where, you know, a failing of seating, I guess. And I understand, you know, the conversation around rail seating is as starting to kind of, you know, accelerate, I think. And I mean, I'm for it. I think I can understand why there's some, you know, the Hillsborough families will be certainly reluctant around it. Perhaps I don't know if that's a universal opinion, but I think that if you actually look at rail seating, just how safe it is, and if it could possibly lower the price of getting into Anfield to some extent. Because I understand there's a discussion to be had about, oh, well, the same people moaning about there's no atmosphere at Anfield are also the ones who are saying, well, we're not spending enough in the transfer market. I mean, my personal view is that's just polarising, you know, fans in many ways, because not everybody thinks along those lines. There are some people who think that way. I just think that Liverpool, if they're talking about, like, recruitment, you've got to recruit better. You know, it's not about spending more money, it's about doing it better and doing it smarter. And I don't think the people that they've got at the moment who are doing that job for Liverpool are particularly doing it smart, despite the fact that Liverpool are saying they've got a world-class sporting director. It's just mixed messages. You know, he's clearly not world-class, because, you know, he's been in that position as a sporting director really for 18 months. I think they had a good summer last summer. Now that everybody knows what his responsibility is, I think he's probably finding it a bit harder. So my view is, you know, that they need to recruit better. I know it sounds very simplistic, but they must find a solution to that. You know, it might sound like you're kind of complaining about it, but ultimately it's for the owners to come up with a solution. You know, they're the guardians of the club. It doesn't matter what I say. It's what they think and the solutions that they come up with. So I think that is an issue for Liverpool. And I think that if they can come to some kind of sensible arrangement around rail seating, whereby there's younger people, you know, boys and girls, you know, who are able to stand together and just enjoy the game. You know, it's just, as you say, there's quite regularly at Anfield now that there are, like, you don't see many people enjoying it really anymore, unless it's a night game and everybody's kind of, you know, it's a massive game. It's very flat. It's not an exciting place to be. If they're going to be honest about it, they're going to have these serious discussions. And unfortunately, some people, it's going to, with progression to make things better, sometimes, you know, you have to show leadership and upset people. And I think that is going to have to happen, you know, at Liverpool for things to improve.
Yeah, well, listen, let's hope it does. So I really, really appreciate the time that you've given us this evening. Yet again, to anybody who's listening, get out there, get on Amazon now, or wait till the 7th of September if you want to buy it in hard copy in your local bookstore. On the Brink by Simon Hughes is his new book. And sure, why not pick up Ring of Fire if you haven't already got it while you're there, eh?
Why not?
So yeah, listen, Si, really appreciate it. We look forward to having you on during the season as well, because I know you said you'll do a bit of stuff with us throughout the season. Yeah. So we look forward to that. And yeah, listen, thanks a million, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, nice one. Thanks.
Cheers. Thanks. Bye-bye.